Hello, I'm Will Stein, and welcome to Geography Island Jams. This podcast is in the same style as the BBC Radio 4 Desert Island Disc series, whereby each episode I ask my interviewee what 8 songs, book, and luxury item they would want to take with them if they were stranded on a desert island. For rights reasons, the music has not been included in the podcast. You can find links to the 8 songs on the LSE Geography and Environment website. I hope you enjoy. Welcome to Geography Island Jams. My guest for this episode is Kyle Kothari. Kyle is an alumnus of the Geography and Environment Department, as he graduated with a degree in Geography and Economics in 2019. Growing up in Harrow, northwest London, Kyle was already familiar to the London area before coming to the LSE. As well as going out and making submission deadlines, Kyle was also competing globally in the men's 10 meters individual and synchronized diving competitions. Since switching from a professional gymnast in 2011, Kyle has been competing internationally, which includes diving with Team GB. In 2014, Kyle was the junior European champion, as well as the junior world bronze medalist, and is now currently training for the postponed 2021 Tokyo Olympic Games. In addition to competing, Kyle coaches younger divers who are aiming to get to the national level. And finally, as well as being a diver, a coach, a geographer, and a pastoral economist, Kyle has recently dipped his toe into being a DJ. Before lockdown, he performed at a UCL event at the London nightclub Corsica. So welcome, Kyle.
Hey, thanks for having me, Will.
So first, I wanted to ask about your recent DJing experience. So what led you to end up performing at Corsica?
I mean, I was sort of one of those classic, after first year, I had a couple of friends in first year. You might know Luca and Joe. They used to DJ the tons and like our student union events. Then I became, like a lot of people do, just like a bit of a bedroom DJ through first, second, third year. And then I was actually doing, me and my friend was holding like a barbecue at his house, and he was like, oh yeah, we've got like a really nice deck set up. Why don't you come along, have a little play? I didn't know anyone there. And I think the fact that in social situations I'm quite awkward, I was like, yeah, that's great. I can hide behind the decks the whole evening. And I ended up DJing at his barbecue for, you know, like what, 40 people, but not like a massive thing. And someone there was from UCL, like a postgrad, and he ran one of their events. And he was like, oh, I liked your music. Like, do you want to come and DJ for us at Corsica for one of our events? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. So ended up going there and doing like a back-to-back set with a friend of mine. And I ended up seeing Luca and Joe there as well. So we had a nice night there together, DJing the whole evening.
Do you have any favourite moments from the night?
When I first arrived, it was like empty. And then me and my mate Arnie were just there messing around on the decks. Just like one of us would be DJing, then one of us had the whole dance floor to ourselves and we'd just be there dancing. That was quite a fun moment before everyone else arrived, because, you know, could play anything you wanted. I'd say that part.
And what would you say is the hardest part about being a DJ?
Well, I wouldn't really call myself a proper DJ. I mean, I'm not bad at DJing, but...
Well, Brian, what's the hardest part of putting yourself behind the decks?
I would say it's, you know, when you know you really like a song, and you obviously don't know how it's going to go down with the crowd before you play it. That's probably the worst feeling, is that if it's a new song or a song that no one knows, it can go one of two ways. Usually when I DJ, I try and like play stuff that people wouldn't have heard before, and so they can, you know, discover some new music. But yeah, there's always a risk in doing that.
Speaking of music, can you now kick me off with the first song you're going to be taking with you?
The first song is actually a song which came up on my Spotify Discover Weekly about a few months ago, and it's called Double Dance Lover. And this version is the disco dub mix, and it's by a band called Mount Liberation. And this, I believe it's two guys from Stockholm who are like multi-instrumentalists, and they sort of, I think their name's like Tom and Nicholas or something like that. And they, what's the best way to put it? It's like a electronic, but also sort of disco-y in between. It's a very niche, because they use instruments like bongos and like a banjo or whatever, like weird instruments that you wouldn't really hear in normal electronic music, to make it more disco-y. And this song's like, the reason I picked this one was because it reminds me of, you know, when you go, if you go on a good night out and it's the end of the night and it's finishing on a song which like takes the crowd really high, it's got that nice little rise to it. And then this, I think it's about 1.5, 2 minutes in, it's got this nice little breakdown into this nice groove. And it properly, like, it's a really nice way to finish an evening. So that's what it reminds me of when I listen to it.
So you studied geography and economics at the LSE between 2016 and 2019. Do you have any favorite experiences from that time?
I would say it's weird, actually, because I actually, when I graduated, now it's been a year, I look back and some of the fondest memories I have was with either you or with Schmidty or Anushka, whoever it was on our course. That was, we were all in the library at, you know, God knows what hour, all got a deadline the next morning. And I like that we were all in the same boat and going a bit crazy together at 4 a.m. in the library. And I think the amount of nights that I spent in the library was probably quite unhealthy. And I have a great, I have a great memory of you. I was on the first floor and I look over the balcony. I look down and I see you with some empty, like an empty bottle of wine and some little pre-mixers that you'd bought from the co-op. Oh, doing God. Your essay. I have no idea how you managed to do an essay drunk, but you know.
I don't know, you know, anything to get you through. When it gets to those like 4 a.m., 5 a.m., you just need a little bit of a kick to get you through.
Yeah, no, I get that. But yeah, they're good memories.
What would you say is your closest call when it comes to submitting a deadline?
Oh, there's been a lot. there was one in first year where me and Anushka were, I think it was GUI 121, which is Sustainable Development Module. We had to give in a hard copy of our essay. That was a strange thing to do, seeing as it was the only course module I've ever done where that was a thing. And we had to hand it in. And I think I had stayed up all through the night and we had about an hour to go. And I was still like halfway through proofreading and I hadn't done references yet. And we had to cycle to uni to hand in the hard copy. So with about half an hour to go, I submitted the online copy. Then the printer was having problems, my one in my room, and it took ages to fix it. Printed it out with 15 minutes to go. And then me and Anushka got on Boris bikes from Rosebery Hall and absolutely sprinted. I'm talking like full Peter Sagandit to LSE and handed it in with 1 minute to go. That was a close call.
Amazing. And now can you tell me about the second song you're going to be taking with you?
So second song is Weird Fishes / Arpeggi by Radiohead. And this is a bit of a strange song in the sense that it's got this 1 minute intro at the beginning, which is just these nice little hi-hats, this nice little rhythm on the drums that goes, and then an arpeggio, which is just, you know, different chords and then them just plucking certain notes from those chords. But the way they've done it is like the whole song feels very melancholic. Yeah, that's the best way to describe it. And the lyrics are a bit strange. I'm not too sure what it's about, but it's the sort of song which is sad, but you could imagine it as like a happy ending to like a film or something like that. So it's one of those that doesn't really get boring for me. It's always nice to listen to.
So you were born and grew up in Harrow and you went to Dr. Chandler's school, which was in Amersham. Do you have any prominent memories from your time growing up in Northwest London?
I have some good memories from Chandler's, yeah. There was one of the best memories I have was we used to do this thing where, you know, in every school, kids kick their ball over the fence and you have to go fetch it and you'd have to ask the teacher to leave the playground. So at Chandler's, the playground backs onto people's houses because it's, you know, middle of the Chilterns countryside area. And so what we did, we found someone had a trampoline in their garden, which backed onto the school. And so when someone had found that, they told the rest of us, and someone kicked over the ball. And one by one, we would just leave the playground, ask the teacher, oh, can we get the ball? And people would just sort of sneak out and join us as well, till about 40, 50 people had left the playground. And I don't know what the teachers must have been thinking, because the playground was like half empty. And we were all in this person's garden, and we decided all of us to get on their trampoline and like bounce on it. And I have a photo back in the day. I had like a massive Nokia brick phone, and I took a photo of our whole group on that trampoline, and I can't find it, and I wish I could, but we ended up jumping and the whole thing just snapped on one side. Whole trampoline broke. And we ended up having to, we all just legged it back to the playground. That's quite a fond memory I have. I mean, awful on our part. I mean, we've just ruined someone's trampoline. But looking back at it, it was very funny.
How old were you at the time?
Oh, must have been like 16. Yeah, 16.
So now we're moving on to your third song. Can you tell me what it is and if there's any reasons why you've chosen it?
Yeah, so third song I've chosen is by Ben Howard. And if you don't know Ben Howard, I'm not sure if you listen to any music at all. It's his song Time Is Dancing, which I actually first heard when I was on a hiking holiday in Madeira with my four mates from home. And these guys are my friends from primary school. So we actually... This is the story behind this song, was that we were best mates during primary school, which we went to St. Martin's in Northwood. And we then fell out of contact when I moved school. And I didn't see the guys for about 10 years, I think, 10, 11 years.
Oh, wow.
And I went to a house party when I was, I think, 16. And I saw one of them there and got reconnected with him. And he was like, oh yeah, come out for lunch with us one day. So we ended up going to a restaurant having lunch. And then it was almost like when I'd met up with him, it was like nothing had really changed. And so I think that following summer, we decided to go on holiday together, us five. And it was very, very strange, because it felt like we were like kids again, basically. And we ended up going hiking in Madeira for 5 days. And we made a collaborative Spotify playlist. So it was a mixture of all our music tastes. And one of my friends, Benny, added this song. And I hadn't heard it at the time, but, you know, hiking through the mountains in Madeira, it's got like a massive intro to this song. It's quite, what's the word? It's also quite sad. Same as the last Radiohead song. But it's got a nice constant beat in the background to it, so it's a bit more upbeat. But yeah, it just reminds me of hiking through the mountains there. That's why I've chosen it. But yeah, it's got a nice like acoustic folky vibe to it, which, like most of Ben Howard's stuff, because he loves surfing. That's what I've read somewhere. So a lot of his music has that like beachy, folky vibe to it. But yeah, that's why I've chosen this song.
So as I mentioned in the introduction, and as it previously said, so you started off as a national gymnast before becoming a professional diver. Can you tell me what led you to become a gymnast in the first place, and then what was it made you change into diving?
So when I, as a kid, I was a bit of like a, I was a bit of an ants in a pants kid. My parents just had no idea what to do with me, because I was just climbing everything, everyone, and just had like too much energy. So they sent me to a nearby gym where they basically, parents can take their kids just to expend energy for an hour. It's just a way of killing off your kids for the evening, so you can, you know, relax and have a glass of wine. And so I went to that one of those, and they basically saw me doing, I think my mum told me, they saw me doing chin-ups on one of the parallel bars just for fun. I don't know why. And they were like, oh, your kid might have some talent. Does he want to join a squad? And my parents were like, well, this is great. We can get rid of him for more hours of the week. So I started in this little squad with like these 7 or 8 other kids, and then got better and moved. Then got a Ukrainian coach who was very strict, and that's when things started. Like I started to take it a bit more seriously, probably when I was like 7, 8, and then by the time I was 10, I was competing nationally. And when I was 11, I was at the national junior national champs. So they're doing your age groups. So in my age groups, I came 4th, and I was like, right, this is something I will be looking to do. Like the Olympics was my dream in gymnastics. Then I went to a competition and did a dismount off the parallel bars. Obviously went wrong, over rotated, put my elbow down on the floor, snapped the other way, dislocated it, tore the ligament, and I was out for 6 months and I had 2 pins in my arm. And it's sort of at that age in gymnastics, it's where you fall behind. It's a very important phase, like that puberty phase, because you start to gain a lot of strength, you start to learn harder skills, and falling behind at that time was quite hard for me to then catch up to the guys that I was competing against before. And then I got a letter through school talking about talent testing that Crystal Palace Diving Club were doing for looking for Olympic hopefuls for, I think at the time it was London 2012. And my dad was like, yeah, Carl, give it a go. And I was obviously dead set on gymnastics still. I was training 6 days a week, doing 24 hours. And so that was where all my efforts was going. Went to a trial session and then like ended up really liking it. And eventually one day a week turned into 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, to the point where I did a few competitions. And after a year, I was national age group champion, which is basically like national level, but in the novice category. So not the best of the best, you're one below that. And I was like, right, if I've managed to do that in a year, I'm just going to switch, because I've obviously got more talent in diving. And then after my second year in diving, I was competing at the national elite, which is the highest junior level. And I got I think a bronze medal that year. And then the following year I switched over, because that year I got bronze on the springboard, so only 3 meters. Then the following year I switched to high diving, so 10 meter platform. And I won the national elite event, and meant that I got selected for the Team GB competitions through the year. And that's when you mentioned at the beginning, junior European champion and junior world bronze medalist. That was 2014. So within 3.5 years ish of starting diving, I got to rank 1 in Europe and rank 3 in the world, which for under 18s, which was actually quite amazing. And then since then, I've been riddled with loads of injuries, but we'll talk about that later.
What would you say you find the most nerve-wracking, doing an exam, diving, or being behind the decks in a big crowd?
Ooh, honestly, none of those three I find that nerve-wracking. I would say the thing I find most nerve-wracking is like large social situations where I have to talk to, when it's a big group, that way you have to like, you know, do the rounds in a sense. You can't just stick in your clique or whatever. Because I'm quite introverted naturally, so talking to strangers and stuff I find very hard. That's the thing I'm most scared of. I would say, yeah, competing is absolutely fine. The DJing stuff, I mean, I don't take it seriously enough, or don't do it seriously enough to the point where I could get nervous about it. And what was the first one you mentioned?
Taking an exam.
See, I quite like exams. I do well in an exam hall. I hate coursework and stuff, because I like cramming, and I like just sitting there for X amount of hours, then it's done, it's out the way. I don't want to have to think about it again.
And then can you now tell me about the fourth song you'll be taking with you?
So the fourth song I've chosen is Day One, Ephemeral, by Tom Misch and Komodi, I don't know quite how to pronounce her name. It's from his 2017 album. It's like it's called 5 Day Misch Gone, where he did like a collaboration with, each song was with like a different artist. Obviously Tom Misch is massively popular at the moment. But I think this is one of his maybe lesser known, not because it's not on his most recent albums, like Geography or What Kind of Music. So it's got like this, it's this classic style, it's this electronic groovy guitar, and it's quite chilled. Very, I've chosen it just for its groove, because the other songs, the other past year have been sad. The first one has been like a bit of like an elation after that end of night out feeling. So this one's just a nice groove, very chilled. Would be nice on the beach. That's the setting I'm imagining in my head. And I think it's about, the words are about meeting someone for like a, for the first time and then falling immediately in love and then never seeing them again. And it just, it reminds me of my flatmate Nico, because every time he goes on a Hinge date or something like that, he'll, or even if he meets a girl, he'll meet them for the first time and then just be like, come back and be like, oh, Carl, I'm in love. And I'm like, Nico, you're not in love. You've said this 20 different times now. and then he'll end up never seeing them again. And the words are exactly, like the meaning of the song is, it reminds me of that all the time. But yeah, so that's my fourth choice.
So am I right in thinking, are you on the Team GB for 2021 Tokyo?
In short, no, because they haven't selected anyone yet and it's still a year to go. So back in, so about 2019, Jan time, I came third at the Nationals and was selected to go to Calgary for a, I think it was the fourth leg of the FINA Grand Prix circuit, which is basically like the F1 Grand Prix circuit. And I said, that's the best way to think about it. They have 10 legs every year. And I came, I got through to the final there. And then in my fifth round of dives, took off from the board and my right Achilles snapped on my takeoff, completely tore in half and wiped out on the dive, got rushed to hospital. And I've spent maybe, I spent 6 months after a surgery just doing like physio, strength and conditioning, really boring stuff. And obviously that put me out of contention to compete at any of that year's events. So I was thinking about 2020 at that point. And I built myself back up, was in really good shape at the end of 2019. And then just, I think it was one or two months before Nationals, I got a back injury, which seemed okay at the time. And then I waited a few weeks, didn't get any better. And basically it wasn't changing. And they said, I basically made the decision to have injections on my lower back. And those injections are like anti-inflammatories. So they were meant to just calm down the swelling around my disc, because I had a bit of a disc protrusion / some inflammation that wasn't going away. And I thought it would make, you know, I thought it just juice me up, get rid of the pain, and I could compete, because it was, that Nationals in January was Olympic qualifiers technically, i.e. it was the first selection event, and if you didn't do well there, you couldn't go to the next one, and etc. And so I missed that, and that was basically my selection for Tokyo 2020 down the toilet. And so I actually started going to like job interviews looking for a job just to do for 6 months or a year, get some experience, and then I would go back into sport. That was my plan, and try for the next cycle. But obviously we got Corona in 2020, so everything, all of these selection events never went ahead, nothing ever happened, everything went into lockdown. I've obviously fully recovered, my back is fine now, and they've basically, with our meetings recently this summer, they've said, right, we're gonna hold the exact same year as last year, so January this in 2021 will be selection event one, and etc. So it's basically given me another chance to get selected again. So yeah, nothing's changed, it's just like repeating a year for me. So yeah, technically I've been given a second shot. We'll see how it goes. But you know, if it doesn't happen, I'm not going to be, there's some great divers on Team GB at the moment, so it's very tough. I mean, if you're top five in the UK, especially in the men's 10 meter section, you'll be top 20 in the world, that sort of level, just because that's the quality of divers GB's got. But yeah, it'll be tough, but you know, looking forward to it.
What would you say has been your favourite moment of your diving career so far?
Favourite moment? I think I've been on some good trips. There's been a lot of good moments. Obviously, winning winning those two medals you talked about, Junior Europeans and Junior Worlds, they were great moments because I wasn't expecting to even finish in the top eight, let alone win. And I had my family out there with me. The Junior Europeans was in Italy, and the Junior Worlds was in Russia, a town called Penza. And my family flew out for both. Those were good moments. I think the Junior Worlds was probably one of the best moments because it was the last round and all three of us fighting for the bronze position had the same dive, same points tally. So it was basically just a head-to-head of who could do the dive, last dive better. That was a good moment. But I would say one of the funnest trips I've been on was actually going to Singapore and Malaysia back-to-back for Legs of the FINA Grand Prix because they were incredible places to visit. No pressure. That sometimes when it's a big event, there's loads of pressure on you. But sometimes for events where it's like a Grand Prix, which doesn't mean so much for selection for another event, it's just a bit like you're in a hot country, amazing places you visit. You're having, it's basically like a holiday with your mates. That's the best way to describe it. So yeah, those sort of trips, they all have great memories.
Can you now tell me about the fifth song you'll be taking with you?
So, yeah, fifth song. The fifth song I'm taking with me is called Toll by Dan Kai. And if you've not heard of Dan Kai, it's Jordan Rakai. They're the same person. It's just another page that he's got on Spotify. Jordan Rakai is known for his like a soulful voice, sometimes like jazzy vibes. He has a lot of great music. I think he's immensely popular right now, Jordan Rakai. But I think his Dan Kai Spotify page has nowhere near the amount of traction that he does, which is strange. I think a lot of people don't know the link between them. So this song starts off with firstly, it's like a lo-fi house song, I would say. That's the vibe. It's very lo-fi, but it's got him obviously singing through it. And it starts off with a sample of Eckhart Tolle, the spiritual teacher guy. He's written a few books, saying something about joy, ease, and lightness, and you should find if there's no joy, ease, and lightness in what you're doing, then time could be covering up the present moment. Something spiritual. I mean, not sure how much of it I buy. I do quite like that quote, but I'm not an exceptionally spiritual person. Well, I'm not a spiritual person. And then it goes into this nice little lo-fi house beat followed by some nice singing. But yeah, it's very chilled, very pleasant to listen to, and a sort of a song you don't really get bored of. You can listen to it a lot of times. That's the general trend I've tried to keep with all of my eight choices, because if I could have picked like eight pop or disco songs or like anything with four chords or anything that's really repetitive. I know, as much as I love them, like if you only have eight songs to choose from, like if you listen to that every single day, you're gonna get sick. But yeah, so fifth choice is Toll by Dan Kai.
In addition to diving yourself, you also teach kids aged 10 to 13 years old. What is your teaching style? Are you like the fun coach or more serious and strict?
I think if you ask my kids, they would say I'm strict. But whenever I ask other coaches, they always see me as quite a fun coach. I think I like to do both. I mean, and my coach when I was first starting diving was this Chinese guy who he's now moved to Beijing. But with their sort of style of coaching, it's very strict. You're there to focus, train. They'll push you to the edge. Like I was there for ridiculous hours. I used to train more hours a week with him than I do now. For no reason apart from they just liked training stupidly long hours. And my body, I think that's probably the reason my body is so ruined. I've had so many injuries, but I would say some of my coaching style does come from that. I can get strict. Especially when the thing for me is like attitude. Like when someone comes in, cause I don't coach, the squad's not like a fun squad. It's not just recreational. They're obviously kids that have a bit of talent and have potential to go, you know, further in terms of diving. So it's obviously they have to enjoy it. That's my number one. That's my top priority. They have to enjoy it. But number two is they are there to get better. So I have to make sure that I keep a certain level of intensity while it being quite fun. But I think, I mean, compared to their previous coach, which is actually one of my diving friends, Grace, she used to coach this. There's seven or eight girls now from 9 to 13. She used to coach them before I did. And apparently I'm far more strict than she was. which, I mean, it could be a good thing. It could be a bad thing. I don't think I'm too strict though. There's definitely coaches that are far more stricter than I am. I never shout, so that's good. But yeah, it's hard analyzing yourself. I feel like I'm a good coach, put it that way. I don't want to big myself up too much, but I think I'm pretty decent.
I'll take your word for it. And now moving on to your sixth song. Can you tell me what it is and any reasons why?
So the sixth song I've chosen is The French Press by Rolling Blackouts Coastal Fever. This song is very, like, the way I describe it is like soft punk, indie, that alternate vibe. Very beachy. It does sound like you're on a beach. And I think it's an Australian band, so that sort of makes sense. I think they're from Melbourne. And it reminds me of, you know, when everyone was doing house parties when they were 14, 15, 16. It reminds me of that indie phase that everyone went through when you go to like a house party and everyone would be, it was just indie. Around where I mean, the house parties I used to go to, I was in school in Buckinghamshire. So everyone listened to indie music. There was no R&B or anything. So it reminds me of that. And it also reminds me of the beach. And it sort of links into my luxury item, but we'll get there. I'll explain it when we get there.
So I've got some classics coming up now. First one is, do you have a bucket list? And if so, is there anything you're most keen to do?
I do have a bucket list, but it's not the sort of bucket list that a lot of people have. It's more just a list of things I want to get good at or do. Like, for example, I just wrote get good at chess on the bucket list and I'll leave it. I can't remember. There was other things on there like learning how to surf. I'll just put a skill. It's more of a thing where I'll just put a skill that I want to learn and I'll leave it there. And then once I've got good at it or once I feel like I've gotten to a level where I'm like, right, I've done that, I'll cross it off. It's not so much like, oh, I want to visit this place or I want to go here. Like, because that stuff is easy. That's not, anyone could just buy a ticket to some country. That stuff is like, that's it. That bucket list is too easy. I feel like I wanted to challenge myself with a bucket list. So DJing used to be on the bucket list. I put it in first year and then now I'm sort of okay at it. I've changed it to like, you know, maybe do, trying to do some events wherever I can, something like that. So it's constantly updating.
Do you have a favorite dish?
Like a last meal sort of thing?
Yeah, if that helps you choose.
I would say it's my granddad's barbecued lamb. We don't have it very often. We probably have it like once or twice a year. And it's always for a special occasion and it tastes so good. Like I've had like 20 cutlets of lamb to myself, fully going greedy and just nicking everything on the barbecue. It's that good. But yeah, that's definitely my favorite. That's my favorite food for sure. If I had to choose. And it reminds me of having barbecues at our house with like the family around in the summer.
And I think we're now moving on to your seventh song. Can you tell me what it is and any reasons why?
So the seventh song I've chosen is Arrival of the Birds by the Cinematic Orchestra. This Cinematic Orchestra are very famous for doing loads of music for films and TV series. I think it's a duo, two guys. And I remember the memory I have of this song is sitting in the flat with my flatmates from uni. And it was, I think Ford actually used it for one of their adverts. And Ford has always been, always used great music for their adverts, I think. And they used this for, if anyone remembers, it was the advert where like all these butterflies sort of fly in and then turn into a car. And they have a version of this song on their Spotify. There's two versions. One's called Arrival of the Birds and one's called Transformation. And the only difference I could tell is that the Arrival of the Birds is far more like string based in terms of instruments. Otherwise the songs are pretty much the same. And it's got this lovely, like nice build from 3 minutes. And then it has this almost, I'm not going to call it, to call it a drop sounds like I'm doing it a disservice, but it, it basically is a drop where like all the stringed instruments come together in this big rise. And it's just, it gets me. We used to sit on the sofa in our flat and we'd all just like belt out the tune for some reason. I have no idea why. And it reminds me of Second and Third Year. But yeah, great song. If you don't feel any emotion after listening to that song, there's something wrong with you.
The final question, what is your favourite thing about studying at the LSE?
My favourite thing is the fact that it didn't seem weird to talk about your modules or like things you're really passionate or interested in. I think at other unis, if you're someone who starts talking about something that you're passionate about or something like a module you're taking that you really like, you're almost like, oh, who is this guy? Why is he talking about this stuff? I just want to, you know, chat rubbish for, I don't know, a couple hours or so, which is, yeah, I fully get that. Like no one wants to be that guy, but it is quite nice occasionally to, you know, actually talk to people that are really interested in similar stuff to you. So I remember going to the pub a lot with like the geography guys and we just end up talking about geography for, you know, a few hours, which I mean, to most people that's, I mean, they wouldn't care, but I mean, I absolutely loved it. So that's why I wanted to, we had this idea before lockdown, me and Alex Schmidty starting like this geography podcast, because every time we'd go to a pub, we just end up talking about geography as lame as that sounds. But if it was just us two at the pub, I don't know why, but just sets us off.
We're now moving on to your eighth and final song. Can you tell me what it is and any reasons why you've chosen it?
So my last song is by Digital Justice and it's called Theme from It's All Gone Pear-Shaped. I don't exactly know if It's All Gone Pear-Shaped is a film or something like that. I have no idea. I've tried to Google it, but nothing really came up. I mean, funny enough, nothing comes up when you type in It's All Gone Pear-Shaped because it's such a common saying. So yeah, Theme from It's All Gone Pear-Shaped by Digital Justice. Because obviously I'm big on, I do like my electronic and techno music, and I could have chosen a lot of techno songs to finish it with. I feel like I needed one in here. But this one's not, I wouldn't say it's techno. It's more like this atmospheric electronic song, quite ambient. And I think it's like 12 minutes long. So it's a really, really long song. But it's the sort of song which you can listen to, and it's got this very, it does feel like film music in a way. Feels like a film score, and it's got these rising synths and like these synths just like these funky synths just like dotting about in the background. And it's got these rising strings as well, along with, you know, obviously a nice beat. But yeah, definitely I've been listening to this song for like the past year, 2 years, and it never gets boring or never gets old. And it always makes one of those songs which it has the same effect that sitting on the toilet does for your thoughts. So like, you know, when you're on the toilet, you're always thinking about loads of stuff, or in the shower, this song just sets off that that thought process. So I thought, you know, on a desert island, if you're lying on the beach and you listen to this, you'd just be like contemplating loads of weird stuff. But yeah, that's why I've chosen this one.
So moving on to the last part now. So you're allowed to take with you the Bible, the beverage report, and a book of your choice. What is the book you're going to be taking with you?
So when I was deciding with what book to take, I had two thoughts in my head. I was like, I'm not going to be that guy who brings, you know, the How to Survive book, because everyone hates that guy. And I'm not going to be I don't want to bring like a storybook or like something where you read it once and then you're just like, no matter how good it is, like, I've read some really great, great books, but it's just, I think reading that multiple times would just, you'd be like, I want something different now. I know what's happening. So I had two thoughts. One was The World's Fittest Book, which is by a guy called Ross Edgley, which is a best-selling book purely because it's purely about his like feats of human endurance and just crazy challenges that he's done, obviously, which I would love to give a try but could never do. Like, for example, he put a tied a 40 stone log or something to his belly and tried to swim from one island to another, and he was swimming for like 36 hours or something like that, and at times he was going backwards because the current was so strong, and he ended up just like burning out and they had to pull him ashore and he failed it. But his most recent one, which isn't in the book, because I think the book was released before then, he swam around the perimeter of the UK, the whole UK, which is already mad, but he did it for, I think, I can't remember exactly how long it took him, like probably like, you know, close to a year, but he was doing 6 hours swimming, followed by 6 hours sleep, 6 hours swimming, 6 hours sleep, constantly for that amount of time. And if you haven't seen it, the YouTube series, I think it was sponsored by Red Bull, of that is an amazing watch, because you know, you follow him day to day and you're seeing all the challenges that he faces, like for example swimming through jellyfish fields or coming across shark, like the basking shark in northern Scotland and stuff. So in terms of, yeah, I think if I was reading that on a desert island, it's quite an inspiring book, constantly keep you motivated, so it's a good source of motivation in that sense.
And then finally, but by no means the least, what is the luxury item you'll be taking with you?
So for the luxury item, I've chosen, and it actually relates to my the song I mentioned earlier, which is the French Press. So I mentioned that song has like a beachy vibe, reminds me of surfing, Australian band. So I was like, right, I can't surf. I've never learned how to, but to get good at surfing is on my bucket list. As like one of my challenges. So I was like, right, luxury item, let's just bring a surfboard. Like, let's do it. I've got all the time. Let's get good at surfing. Feel like you wouldn't get bored. Obviously it depends if the island has good waves, but you know, let's just say it does. But yeah, surfboard would be my luxury item of choice. I had some people say like, Carl, wouldn't you just bring a diving board? You can dive into the sea. And I'm like, well, there's already a cliff for that or something. Like, I don't need to, that's already there. Yeah. I can do that anyway. So yeah, surfboard.
Well, thank you, Kyle, for telling me your geography and jams.
No problem. Thanks for having me.